Good. Hello, good evening. We are the E-Team. We will start our book reading, performance, multimedia screening thing now. There we go. Shall we go? Okay, good. We'll start now.
Thank you, everyone, for coming. We are really happy to be here tonight. And thank you, Alan, for inviting us.
Toward the end of the year 2005, on a gray November day, with two right hands stacked up on the same mouse sitting on a desk between digital cameras, roasted almonds, USB sticks, memory cards, external hard drives, books, bills, and a bottle of water in a one-bedroom apartment in New York City, we bought a piece of land off the internet. It was the cheapest plot in Europe we could find for sale that day. We had only searched in Europe, but the reason the land ended up being in Germany, the country we had grown up in, was as much a coincidence as the fact that this particular piece of land came with people. The property, an allotment garden containing 15 parcels, was located on the outskirts of a village called Dasdorf. The publicly available satellite images of the area were very low resolution. They looked grainy, outdated, and dull, as if nothing in them justified more detail. Our purchase appeared to be a crooked rectangle, a few hundred pixels defined by a dozen shades of green and brown, anchored between the reddish squares of row house rooftops and the straight gray line of the road. The patterns beyond continued as bigger patches of yellow, beige, and light green fields.
Tonight to talk about cultural displacement. It's a term that applies to all migrant situations. Migrants are people who have left their homes and cultural settings and who have started a new life in another country or in another setting, which is initially strange to them. They adapt, but their rootlessness will always keep them a bit out of place. When they return to their country of origin, they return as strangers. We also would like to talk about time displacement. In sociology, the term refers to the idea that new forms of activities replace older ones. The new activities are usually technology-based, most common the communication and information technologies, such as the internet. When we say time displacement, we also want to say that the story of our novel is situated in a country that does not exist anymore. We also want to talk about migrating forms. Grabeland was not supposed to be a film. Grabeland was supposed to be a film. When we set out to visit the set of allotment gardens we had bought in Germany, sight unseen of the internet, we brought our video cameras. Our plan was to film everything. But there was resistance. Grabeland resisted to be a movie. The actors resisted to be actors. And the land resisted to be a backdrop. Hence, the project turned itself into a performance that lasted 10 years. A performance without any audience. And then that performance turned itself into a novel, which today, on the day of its so-called book launch, wants to be something else than words being read to you.
On April 28, 2006, we visited Dasdorf for the very first time. Following the directions of a German-speaking GPS device that came with a rental car, we drove through Dasdorf and then stopped at what felt like the end of the village, next to the actual manifestation of the virtual piece of property we had bought online. "This is the original," we said. "This is a hard copy. In case all our digital data is gone one day, this is where it can go back to restore. This is where it can eventually recover everything that's lost."
So we are very happy that we are here today at the Spotty Dog. We like dogs that do not spread consistently or in predictable patterns. And we like to connect the dots that are irregular and uneven. So again, thank you, Alan, for inviting us. And thank you to Nightboat Books, who published our book, especially Steven Montica and Lindsay Bolt, who was our editor. And also thank you, or Dankeschön, to Meng Fan and Aaron. Meng Fan and Aaron and I, we meet since 1.5 years every Wednesday at the Black Rock Plaza in Midtown Manhattan. And we sit there next to an artificial waterfall under bamboo trees, and we speak German and we speak Chinese, and English is our second language. And that's how we know each other. When you open the book, the first quote that you come upon is from Andrei Tarkovsky, the Russian filmmaker. And this is the quote. We also put it up there.
My encounter with another world and another culture and the beginnings of an attachment to them had set up an irritation, barely perceptible but incurable, rather like unrequited love, like a symptom of the homelessness of trying to grasp what is boundless or unite what cannot be joined. A reminder of how finite, how curtailed our experience on Earth must be.
The back of the book states the setting is in a country that no longer exists. Well, the village of Dustorf is indeed fictional. I also assumed this book was set in Germany. Can you speak a bit more about the way in which this country is fictional? In this imagining of Germany without the collapse of the Berlin Wall?
What is a country? From the outside, it's a piece of earth defined by borders and stereotypes. From the inside, it's a way of living one's life in one's culture. But what is one's culture? Is it the way we do things? Our story is set in Germany, in a place that used to be last East Germany. We fictionalize a group of elderly Germans that used to be East Germans. Together with that group, we cross an ocean and the United States while never leaving Germany. What applies to a place may as well apply to time. One can live in the past, and at a certain age, when change is happening too fast to keep up with, that might be preferable. What is a spatial consequence of living in the past? Maybe one lives in a country that does not exist anymore?
From the way he addressed the situation, without making eye contact, we knew that he had watched us walking down Village Road, most likely from behind the curtain, and drawn his conclusions. From the way he yelled at us, we knew that the style of our shoes and the way we set one foot in front of the other had given him a concrete idea of what kind of people we were and how to deal with us. It was obvious that he had meticulously counted the instances we had taken pictures and deciphered the ways we held on to our photo cameras as clear evidence that we didn't know why we were in Dustorf and what exactly we should do here. He could smell that that made us very uncomfortable. We could tell that the way we stood in front of him, slightly bent behind the fence, assured him beyond any doubt that we had arrived with nothing else but questions. Questions so ambiguous they had turned us into question marks ourselves. We knew with the same unshakable certainty as he that the moment he had laid eyes on us from behind the curtain, in the apartment block number 5 on Village Road, he had seen us not as humans, but as question marks, and therefore had righteously reasoned in his straightforward village logic that we would do questionable things. Whatever a human does is human. Whatever a question does is questionable, very questionable. He knew, we knew it. It was right to yell at us for showing up unprepared and unannounced and uninvited, intruding on his space and wasting his time. And therefore, he went on. I'm 78 years old. 78. How much longer do you want me to ride my bike to that pond to get water in buckets? Where are the landlords? It had taken him one look from behind his curtain to know exactly how to attack our soft spot. And now he shamelessly took advantage of it. Landlords. He kept yelling for the landlords. Over and over again, he conjured the exploitative master part of the word, simply because he knew very well that already the sound of that word would make us feel guilty enough to not ever dare asking him about the 13 euros he owed us in yearly rent. He made our relationship sound feudal, medieval, ancient, raw. Right away, he could tell that whenever we entered the remote parts of a rural countryside, we bowed to the customary rights of the local people out of respect and out of fear. One glance from behind the curtain in his living room, and he knew that he could intimidate us with his old iron rake, that he could use his old iron rake to simply rake away the applicability of national formalized laws, most importantly, the financial part of our landlord and tenant relationship. The thick black hair sprouting in his nasal cavities clearly detected the smell that came from our armpits. He kept screaming and shouting, and we did not say a word in response. And that led him to conclude, we assumed with a high degree of certainty, as we saw ourselves standing there, slightly bent and sweating from under our armpits, that we were cowards. And that's how it went. He kept shouting and shoving his thick red fingers in front of our faces without looking us into the eyes, and we stared at him in a sort of disbelief, without interrupting his vocal outpour. He kept itemizing our duties and responsibilities as landlords, until eventually he kept repeating the same phrases over and over again. When the repetition formed a recognizable pattern, it felt somewhat safe to halfway tune out.
In 2001, we discovered that we could buy land on eBay, mostly in remote areas, sight unseen in online auctions. There was one auction that started with a bid of $1. We were living in New York City in a very small apartment with no money for renting a studio space. We bid. The land will be our studio. We'll work remotely, we said. We'll get access via satellite images. That will enable us to keep the overview.
The book is divided into two voices. One is a fictitious inner monologue of the gardeners, who talk in a first-person plural about what's going on, and the second one is that of the Americans, which is a fiction of our collective inner voice. To give you an idea of how different and how similar these two voices are, we are now reading a part from the gardener's point of view.
Every time the Americans showed up, they parked a different car in front of the gardens. The first time they came was a Nissan Micro from Hamburg, then a blue Fiat from Switzerland, then it was a Fiat from Dresden, then a white Mazda with a Frankfurt license plate, then a white minivan that had a license plate from Leipzig. I wrote all of that down in my yearly kitchen calendar, just to have a record. The American West, you will say to Mr. Fuchs, is very different from the landscape around Dasdorf. The expanse of the desert is deceiving, especially the empty part of it. The absences are haunting, overwhelming, shocking. You have to come one day and let it turn you into a persona you didn't know was part of your psychological repertoire. There's no comparison to anything we know from Europe in spatial mental terms, we will say, before it's Mr. Fuchs' turn to finally speak and ask, "Did you build a house there or what?" His mouth half full of strawberry cake when asking the question. "No, we didn't," we will reply. Mr. Fuchs will say that the cake we had baked and served wasn't terrible, even though he would have preferred less sugar in the glaze, and was used to a much softer, spongier crust, and that he would like to have a second piece. When the allotment garden in Dasdorf popped up on our screen, he would say to Mr. Fuchs, while scooping a second piece on his plate, "We needed to give it another try." "Imagine," we would say, "after the big open desert lot, now a small fenced-in subdivided garden plot. After a perfect square, suddenly a crooked rectangle. After the American West, now the German East. And then we thought of you, the people," you would say to Mr. Fuchs. "There will be trees, there will be fence posts, and there will be living tenants," we said to each other on the day in November of 2005 when we placed our online auction bid for the allotment gardens in Dasdorf. It will be a good place to figure out what is going on between man and nature. "We will go and plant a variety of seeds," we said to each other, "and then observe what sprouts and which idea will emerge as the most likely one. We will tend to the outcome and help it grow, and then, as the people in Dasdorf engage and show us how to turn that sprout into something beautiful, and as the bees of Dasdorf come and pollinate, and as the soil keeps nurturing and the climate is right, then the experiment will produce new hybrid seeds. We will collect these seeds and store them over the winter in a dry and cool place, and then distribute them the next year, so more people can sow them and more ideas will grow. And every time we perform an action, we will get a reaction. Every time we take a step forward, we will push the earth backward. Every time we start the car in Dasdorf, stones will fly into the air from under our spinning tires. And that energy will contribute to the spinning of the world. And isn't that what we want, to keep the world spinning?"
Was ist geschehen?
Zeit, wo die Soldaten sind. Über Gräbern weht der Wind. Wann wird man je verstehen? Wann wird man je verstehen? Sag mir, wo die Gräber sind. Wo sind sie geblieben? Sag mir, wo die Gräber sind. Was ist geschehen? Sag mir, wo die Gräber sind. Wann wird man je verstehen? Sag mir, wo die Blumen sind. Wo sind sie geblieben? Sag mir, wo die Blumen sind. Was ist geschehen? Sag mir, wo die Blumen sind. Mädchen pflückten sie geschwind. Wann wird man je verstehen? Wann wird man je verstehen?
They always stayed somewhere else overnight. They stayed in Cameron. They stayed in Marderhof. They stayed in Bergstarter. They stayed in Chichendorf. They even stayed in New Brandenburg in the Hotel Emmering once. Kirscha had told the mother. Every time they came, they stayed in a different place. They made us nervous with their restlessness. They were always running around, driving back and forth, as if they would die a shameful death if they didn't try and test everything within their reach. Every day a new thing captured their attention. They caught butterflies. They picked flowers. They jumped up and down after they found some wild strawberries, as if they were 5 years old and had discovered the eighth wonder of the world. Typically American, the sister said. But one could tell nothing would ever last with them. No commitments. These fluffballs looked at a thing with big eyes, clutched it to their hearts, but while they talked about loving it, one could already see their eyes scanning the horizon for the next thing. And if there was no next thing, then they got bored and arose and squatted in front of Kirkheimer's old shack on a stone, held their heads in their hands and did nothing. Nothing all day long.
Every morning around 8 we arrived in the gardens with the intention of doing something, but once there, we did not know how to proceed. We threw a stone and it landed nowhere. Everything in Dasdorf was familiar, yet we felt surrounded by nothing but incomprehensibility. The world had abandoned us. We had cast ourselves out far beyond the limits of knowing what to do. We weren't even sure what year it was, what century. We blamed the internet. We blamed each other, the stoic, stifling, unspontaneous Germanness in us. Nothing is more hindering than being a German among other Germans in a country like Germany, we said. In every German sits a slave and everything in this country is a burden. Every German activity means obeying. Hence it is accompanied by a groan. Remember how the saleswoman in the supermarket's bakery groaned when we told her we wanted to buy a loaf of whole wheat bread, we said to each other.
Ich komme aus China. Ich habe einen deutschen Seele.
Ich komme auch aus China, aber ich habe kein deutsche Seele.
At least in Neubrandenburg, connecting to the internet is a possibility, we said, looking at the finger. In Dasdorf, the internet isn't even an option, we said. As long as Dasdorf identifies as Dasdorf, it will be self-contained, like a biosphere that maintains its own interconnected network, self-assured in its own Dasdorfian dimensions. Dasdorf will always believe that every phenomenon, every creature, and every creation in Dasdorf can be explained by something within the physical circumference of Dasdorf. To Dasdorf, everything that matters happens in Dasdorf, along brick walls, laid in herringbone and basket weave patterns and small winding paths densely bordered with dandelion, daisies, speedwell, cocksfoot, hound's tongue, yarrow, and smooth meadow grass. Corkscrew hazel, cherry laurel, pussy willow, black elder, silver lime. Dustov exhales these names into the atmosphere with the same matter-of-fact affection as the village teacher calls out the names of children in first grade. It's all the same, all part of the same universe called Dustov. Such is the spell of Dustov, we said. And once under the spell, every human utterance or action is more or less a compliant response to Dustov. In Dustov, there is nothing and never has been anything original or anything special. Never has anything more extraordinary happened in Dustov than Dustov itself.
It's just part of Dustov to love furry catkins in early spring, or to be in love with the softness of the flowers of a pussy willow. It's part of Dustov to have the meaning of one's life depend on the flowering of cherry blossom, even so everybody obviously knows that the existing love for a plant can't excuse a missing love for another human, and that being in a meadow can't make up for being among people. So what? The titmouse does not care if you chirp. If not faced with competition, nobody shows any signs of ambition. If not surrounded by contradictions, our brains don't demand much stimulation. As a result, we are as contented as slugs sitting in the garden in Dustov, nibbling on berries. There is no urge to change anything in the world while watching a butterfly getting nectar from a flower, we said. That looking at the most efficient seed packing in the universe naturally occurring in the spiral pattern in the head of a sunflower will produce as much or as little wonder as looking at the Empire State Building, the Golden Gate Bridge, and Mount Rushmore combined, is a truth that sits in Dustov like a top inflating and deflating the air sac below its sad-looking mouse, we said, and then gestured for the waitress to come.
Guten Abend, ich bin Amerikanerin und komme aus Deutschland. Good evening, I'm American, but I'm from Germany.
晚上好，我是德国人，来自埃塞俄比亚。Guten Abend, ich bin Deutsche und komme aus Äthiopien. Good evening, I'm German and I'm from Ethiopia.
Guten Abend, ich bin Deutsche und ich komme aus Griechenland. 晚上好，我是德国人，我来自希腊。Good evening, I'm German and I come from Greece.
我是波兰人，来自加纳。Ich bin Polen und komme aus Ghana. I'm Polish but come from Ghana.
晚上好，我是墨西哥人，我来自中国。Guten Abend, ich bin Mexikanerin und komme aus China. Good evening, I'm Mexican but I'm from China.
Guten Abend, ich bin Thailänderin und ich komme aus den Philippinen.晚上好，我是泰国人，我来自菲律宾。Good evening, I'm Thai and I come from the Philippines.
晚上好，我是美国人，我来自日本。Guten Abend, ich bin American again und komme aus Japan. Good evening.I'm American and come from Japan.
晚上好，我是中国人，我来自冰岛。Guten Abend, ich bin Chinesin und ich komme aus Island. Good evening, I'm Chinese but I'm from Iceland.
Guten Abend, ich bin Italienerin und ich komme aus China. 晚上好，我是意大利人，我来自中国。Good evening, I'm Italian and I come from China.
You can pass this around, you can choose one. Pick one and I pass it around.
We had booked Walter in the horse carriage for 4 consecutive days. We had told him on the phone from New York that on the first day we would like to get a sense of the vastness of the United States.The sheer scale of the land mass this country uses up on the North American continent. Maybe for the first day, we told Walter on the phone, we just ride through the landscape and experience distance. Walter had insisted that distance was not a destination, and that he had to know where to go. Westward from Dasdorf and then a little south, we had told him. Your choice. You're paying for it, he said. Walter turned around from his coachman's seat and said to me, "He who wants to eat in Spain must bring his kitchen along." I looked at the mother with big eyes and pointed at Walter's whole wheat bread with liverwurst, but she just shrugged her shoulders and pointed toward the Americans. "Nobody looks a gift horse in the mouth," she hissed, like a lazy snake before she took another bite. After lunch, we took the old mill road toward the old paper envelope. "Progress," the sister cried. "Now the trees are growing out of the chimneys." "Nobody cares of anything anymore. That's older than 5 years," the mother said. She's right. Everything has to be newer and faster and better and bigger. More work, more stress, more vacation, more stress, more holidays, more stress, more hobbies, more stress, more sick days, more stress, more eating, more dieting, more stress. Whenever I see my daughter, she's stressed out from working or from planning another vacation with another boyfriend. I don't understand. I never understood. We never took a vacation when it gets dark outside. We go to bed. We sleep. That is our vacation.
We jeep off. Nothing is more passive than being a passenger, we thought. Nothing more passive than being a person who sits in a vehicle being pulled forward. Nothing more pragmatic than entrusting the direction of one's body in time and space to a coachman or a pilot, who in turn entrusts in advancement to a bunch of engines, propellers, wings, or wheels.
"In what model were?" Martha said, interrupting our thought. "It's the amount of force exerted over a distance. Energy is the capacity to do the work, and power is the amount of work divided by the time it takes to do it."
We nodded. While still in Queens, we had imagined that the mode of transportation would have an impact on how our journey would unfold, that it would be a less passive journey sitting in a horse-drawn carriage than sitting on a train, that we would be less detached from our surroundings and each other by being pulled by an animal instead of an engine.
We had thought that it would be easier to make a connection in a horse carriage where the benches were facing each other, then in a minibus, where the rows of seats were behind each other. Connections, we thought. Connections with what? We suddenly wondered. While still in Queens, we had told ourselves that the speed of moving forward would make a difference. That it would make a difference that we would travel without having to wear seat belts. Now, sitting on a wooden bench in a horse-drawn carriage without a seat belt, we wanted to think further about these things, but suddenly the enveloping smell of rape and bloom became sickening. And while it would be better, we thought, if there were windows through which one could see the rape seed, but would not have to smell it, we immediately imagined the ineffectiveness of the pane of glass. It was the visual abstraction of monocultured land, we thought, that outrageous span of yellow fields in contrast to those small medieval villages, that was as sickening to the eyes as the strange fleshy smell was to our noses and its narcotic scent to our stomachs. Not speed, but sight was the key, we thought. Miss Troutman looked as if she was getting sick as well. She had pulled out her handkerchief and pressed it against her mouth. Maybe the rapeseed was rotting because of all the rain, we thought. Maybe it was not rapeseed flowers in bloom we smelled, but rotting rapeseed roots.
is a book release party. The books are for sale. Come up and speak to the authors and hang out. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.